Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190. And we talk about business here. In particular, today we're going to talk about small business and who I wanted to address specifically, whether you own a business, whether you are in a leadership role at a business, or whether you are planning on starting a business, is sort of what to do if you are perhaps in the doldrums just a bit. And we all run into those situations. Business is not bad necessarily. You're just sort of stuck in a rut, need to get out of it, and want to try and do a few things. One of the things I love about Jim Collins, he's got a in his book, How the Mighty Fall, he talks about the trap and the horror you can get into of hubris or arrogance in your business. And what you can do in there, the problem with arrogance is this, and every one of us are susceptible to this. In fact, Collins specifically talks about a particular type of arrogance or hubris, which is hubris born of success. And that's probably the worst kind, because that's an arrogance that we have gotten arrogant because of past successes. In other words, we have done things that have worked. So somehow we get the idea that we know everything. And as Collins says in his book, that's the first step to failure, and that's something we want to avoid. So we always want to be willing to learn things and get around. You know, if you're in the doldrums in your business, by the way, let me parenthetically insert here, we are streaming live on biz1190.com right now if you're about to run out of range or about to get out of your car. And today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. So if you miss part of the program or you have to leave before it's over, check us out there. You know, in today's business environment, we have so many methods now of advertising and so many ways of reaching people that can almost become daunting to many of us. And almost, though, you know, it's like you go into a restaurant and there are too many items on the menu such that you almost become indecisive because you can't decide. Well, it's like that in business sometimes. We can have so many ideas going in so many different directions that we can't get anything done. So occasionally we need to stop and focus. Let me give you something you can do with your team, a little exercise that'll really help you. This helps me a lot in that regard. I've always referred to this as the paradigm question, and I really thought it came from Stephen Covey up until very recently when I heard that it actually came from a guy named Joel Barker, an author. And here's the paradigm question. It's something you can sit down with a team, with your leadership team, and just ask in a room with a board and just sort of be prepared to use it as a brainstorming type thing. And here's the question. What's impossible to do today that if it were possible would make a significant positive change in our business? Now, I'm not wording it exactly like it is in the books, but that's generally, you get the idea there. And what that causes you to do is to start asking, is to start thinking kind of out of the box. Because, you know, a lot of times we don't say things in a meeting. We don't give out ideas because we'll say, well, that's not a good idea. That's impossible. Well, we just ask you to give us an impossible idea. So tell us what's impossible. Come up with it. And that will work whether you're in a business or a church or any other organization in ways of seeing what changes can be made. What you do is you go around the room and you do that. You spend a little time and you'll end up filling up, if you sort of get this going, you'll end up filling up a blackboard or a notepad or whatever you're writing those down on, and it'll invoke some good discussions. And here's how you then make some use out of that. Once you get all those down, and don't limit them, just go to as far as you can go with that, start going back through and perhaps prioritize a bit. Say, which would be the best if it really, you know, we've got 10 things listed here, which would be perhaps the best thing? And maybe you can sort of come to an agreement and get it down to, if you can't get it to one, get it down to two or three. And then here comes the real crux of the question. Is there anything about those two or three top things you've come up there with, the impossible things? What about them is not impossible? What's not impossible? Because you may find that while the primary idea they came up with is not possible to do in today's environment or technology or whatever the environment of your business is, what you may find there is some portion of that is possible. And there's a real value in that. I've told our story on the air here before of an EMA. We've done this several times. We do this fairly often. And what we've done is some years ago when we were primarily a shop repair business. We still do a lot of shop repair, but it's not our primary income anymore. But back in the days when electronics were a little more, industrial electronics were a little more expensive than they are now, and before surface mount technologies began to be widely used, we did a lot of circuit board type repairs. And we played this game, and we came up with the idea. We were a national force in doing this, but we came up with the idea of, you know, if we could turn all our shop repair around in 48 hours, we would absolutely own the shop repair business in the United States. Well, that's impossible. It's impossible for a variety of reasons. Number one, you can't get parts that quickly. We had some parts that had a 6 or 8 week lead time, and so that was impossible to do. Very often we got in things we had no schematics on, and it took us a while to perhaps draw schematics and design test gear and things like that. So it just, 48 hours was not feasible. So then we came up with the idea, when we came to the second part of the question, what about that is not impossible? And here's what we came up with. This is just something that came out of our team. The idea that although not every piece of equipment we got in for repair could be repaired in 48 hours, we did get in some things that could be repaired in 48 hours. And we began to identify those things. And to sort of our surprise, and this may or may not prove true in your business, to our surprise, those things were the most profitable repairs we did. So we launched a program called the Fast Track Repair System. We began to advertise the fastest drive repair in the country. And as a result of that, we did a substantial expansion of our business based on that. And here's the surprising thing about it, is, and this is a good thing about just being aggressive in your business approach, is we began to get in a lot of repairs that were not fast track repairs. It's just the idea that people liked dealing with a company that was forward thinking, that was aggressive in what they were trying to do, and they were trying to serve their customers. Now, listen, many of you are not in the business I'm in, so that would be an entirely different scenario for you, but you could come up with something in your own business. I was trying to think on the way over here to the studio how that might apply to some other businesses. I was thinking in terms of, you remember back at one time when computers and computer peripherals first came out, you would get these manuals. You know, no one sends you a manual anymore now. It's on a, it's either online or at the very least, it's on a DVD you get. But you know, those manuals are sometimes 300-400 pages long. And in order to do very simple things, you had to wade through, you know, hundreds of pages of manual, and it was very frustrating for the users of that equipment. Well, what the manufacturers came up with, again, thinking of this paradigm, that it's not possible to do away with that manual because it is, in fact, a very complex piece of gear. It, in fact, does have a lot of features, and you have got to have it all in a manual, how to do it. So what they came up with, though, was, and you've all seen these, a little quick start manuals, a little addendum manual. It's only 2 or 3 pages, and it has called what's called Quick Start in there. And it serves the people that don't have a very complex situation. It's just how to, you know, get the equipment out of the box, plug it in, get it turned on, do 2 or 3 things, they'll have it working. And for a lot of people, that's all that's required. So they get that going by looking at those 2 or 3 pages and not having to read several hundred pages. And that's the whole idea of, it was impossible to do away with the manual because you needed it. If you had that, if you needed the complex features that were inside that equipment, you really needed a manual to be able to do that. But they identified the fact that not everybody did. So it's the idea of serving the customers, adding value to customers by just looking at impossible situations and saying what part of that is not impossible. It's not impossible to put some of the things in 2 or 3 pages, and those things happen to be the things that most people do. Well, it's a perfect example of that. You also think of like restaurants. Perhaps a restaurant would like to have a goal of, let's serve everybody within 10 minutes. Well, you know, in a restaurant, that's not possible. You go in there and you want certain food. It takes longer than 10 minutes to fix it. There's other people there. But, you know, there are some restaurants, if you'll go in there, they have what they call their quick serve menu. And you sit down, and this is already prepared food. And you know this when you go in. But if you're a customer that wants things in a hurry, you go in there and you order off that menu. That's the whole idea of, you know, the Little Caesars has the 5-minute pizza. Now, you may say, leaders, you know, you think other people have better pizza than Little Caesar. Well, fine. But if you need a pizza in a hurry, where are you going to go? You go to Little Caesar's because you walk in the door, you'll be walking out the door with a pizza in 5 minutes. Well, you can't do that anywhere else. Again, it's just a way of serving your customer, looking outside the box a little bit and saying, you know, it's not possible to serve everybody a fully cooked, custom-made pizza in 5 minutes. It takes longer than that to make one and cook it. You're looking at, you know, 30 minutes or so to do that. But not everybody has time for that. Not everybody wants a custom-made pizza. So Little Caesars seized that opportunity by saying it was, although it was impossible to serve everybody a pizza in 5 minutes, there were some pizzas they could serve in 5 minutes. And so that's the idea. It's the entire idea. It's just a way to stimulate discussion in your group and get things and get things going. It's also a great motivator for morale because, you know, once any company begins to see that things are moving forward, once your team begins to feel that things are moving forward, that new things are taking place in your company, there's a new infusion of energy into your company, and you're looking for new ways to be better than you are, that's very contagious. That catches on, and people really do enjoy doing that. You know, the other thing that I think a lot of people in business these days fall into a trap of is to somehow keep thinking that the times we're in right now are unusual, and somehow in the future, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. You know, the uncertainty in the market's going to get better. And for those of us that are my age, we can look back to the 90s, when sort of was a real boom time in business in the United States. A lot of business growth, very low unemployment, if you recall, and all that. You look back at those days and you think, man, if we could just be back then. But here's the problem. We're not going back to the 90s. Now is the new normal. This is normal now. So you've got to learn to be successful now, like it is right now. You can't wait for the future. You can't go back in time. You've got to do it now. So all of us can fall into that trap. And, you know, technology is a big part of that. You can bemoan the fact that there's been a decline in traditional in the effectiveness of some traditional marketing. And it absolutely has. There's no doubt about that. That's it's all changed. So change with it. Embrace technology. And, you know, you can do that if you're 70 or 80 years old. You can still embrace new technologies. It's not that hard. Or as I always tell some of my friends, hire a kid. If you don't know how to run a website, hire a kid. They do. And let them run it for you. If you don't know how to do, if you're a type of business that could benefit from a great Twitter presence, well, ask some younger people about it. You don't have to know all that stuff yourself. We're going to talk about that and more as the day goes on. I'm glad you're here. By the way, if you have a question for me, you can always email me at eddie@eddiemayfield.com, or just visit the website. Our business website is emainc.net. I'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Driven to Business. Eddie Mayfield, glad you're here. We're just talking about business in general. We're talking about how to perhaps shake your business out of the doldrums, or perhaps even, you know, sometimes a lot of us that run businesses, perhaps if we really, really want to get personal about it, it is us that need shaken out of the doldrums. That happens to me sometimes. It probably happens to you. And we're going to help you out with that. We were talking just before the break about the idea of looking for change in the environment and somehow hoping that the uncertainty in the market that a lot of us see right now is somehow an anomaly, and pretty soon that's all going to straighten out. It's going to go back to the way it was before, or the future's going to be so much better, and you can wait, and you can just hang on until then. But that's really not a wise philosophy at all. What you should do is figure out that the way it is now is the way it is. This is a new normal. It will change, of course, but it's the new normal. And you need to be successful now. You're given now. You weren't born, you know, to run a business 50 years ago, at least most of us weren't. And you are not going to, you may or may not be around 50 years to run another one. So you're going to deal with now what you have right now. You know, wishful thinking didn't help us at our company. I can tell you that. And neither does crying and longing for past days. We've done a decent job in our business, I think, of adjusting to our business strategies to the new normal. And I think you can do the exact same thing. One of the things we're going to have to do, all of us, is we have to earn the right to tell our story. The days of being able to just hang out a sign, I think, and have people beat a path to your door, if that ever was the case, and I'm not sure it ever was, well, I can tell you that's gone now. It's gone now. I always get amused seeing these guys on the side of the road with the sandwich signs doing outrageous things and dancing. Well, you know why they're doing that? It's because no one is paying attention to their signs. We all see the signs, and we've all put up filters for them. We don't see them. So they have people out there doing these outrageous things. There's a guy over by our office that's just an incredible dancer. We all get tickled when we go to lunch, and we see him out there dancing in the streets. He really could be a professional dancer. But here's the horrible thing. I don't even know what he's advertising. I can't remember. I just remember him being out there dancing. I don't endorse that necessarily as a way of getting business, but nonetheless, it's a way, is how far people go to attract new business. Let me give you maybe a couple better ideas about that might more suit your personality and your business. And that is, add value to your customers and your prospects. And this is part of the sales process, but it's aside from the sales process. You know, I started off years ago in my marketing background doing primarily direct mail marketing. And some of you have never been involved with that at all. But I did a lot of it, and I actually, not only from my ideas, but reading how other people did it, paying close attention to it, and sort of adopting and refining those ideas for myself and the business that I was in, we began to have a lot of success in that, and I began to have pretty high return rates on direct mail, and high enough, in fact, that I began to get invited to speak to various organizations about how to do it. And all I did at those organizations was tell them what I did. I didn't try to teach a course on it or anything. I just said, here's what worked for me. Maybe this can work for you. But, you know, here's a newsflash. Direct marketing like that is not as effective as it used to be, at least in my opinion. It's not. Now, there may be some people argue about that, but I don't think it is. I even wrote some magazine articles a few years ago about how to do direct mail and so forth. But we do almost no direct mail in our company anymore. We don't find it very effective. What we find really works now is to give your customers and your prospects something of value. You know, it may or may not work in your business. I don't know how your business is lined up, but in our business, we have a great deal of success with doing lunch and learn type environments. Now, we're a technical business. We're in the electronic motor drive business. So that's a very tech, almost tech nerdy type business. And it's not of interest to anyone that is not users or appliers of that equipment, has no use in it. But again, if they don't know anything about the equipment, then they're not a customer or a prospect of ours, so we don't really care. We're focusing in on the little group that we deal with right there. And what we tell them, we'll have a seminar on things like, this is going to bore some of you to tears here, but you know, things like line harmonic mitigation, how to get rid of power line harmonics, or perhaps how to save energy using electronic motor drives, or perhaps how to reduce noise in an environment. I'm talking about electrical noise, how to reduce electrical noise, and how to properly wire things so that it'll work, how to set up control schemes that will be the most effective that they can do, perhaps how to do very difficult applications like center winders and things of that sort. Those are the kinds of things that we do in lunch and learn type environments at predictive maintenance. We do a lot of that, predictive maintenance type things. And we do that at no charge, generally, to customers. We go in and do it for them. And what we do, we don't do a heavy-duty selling job there with them. We don't stand there and beat them over the head with our literature. We actually are. We take great pains and great time and great care to see that we are giving them something of value during that lunch and learn. We're bringing in, you know, pizza, chicken, whatever we're doing. And we're sitting down, and we want to be sure that those maintenance engineers and plant engineers and so forth that are in there with us, that when they leave after that lunch, they have gained something of value there. Now, that's what you do for the marketing. Now, it's indirect selling in a way. What you're basically doing is setting yourself up as an expert, someone who will impart value to them. And I'm telling you, that works in today's market. You know, we've talked here before, and it's just a truism. People like to buy things. This is true in the consumer world, in the business world, in industrial world, in any world you can name. People like to buy things, but they do not like being sold things. And you have to avoid the appearance of trying to sell people things, and instead become a person of value to them. You hear various terms about this, consultative selling and all that. It all means the same thing. You do something of value to them, something of real value, not contrived. You're not being misleading or anything at all. You don't, there's no bait and switch here. We don't tell them we're going to do lunch and learn on harmonic mitigation and get in there and spend the whole time demonstrating a new variable frequency drive to them and try to sell them that drive. We don't do that. If we say it's going to be on harmonic mitigation, we do a seminar for them on harmonic mitigation, and we tell them how to eliminate or reduce at least line harmonics, what the various IEEE rulings are on that, and so forth. We spend time with that and educating them on how to do it. What that earns us the right with that customer to then say, now this is what we do for a living, but you've earned the right. And I would encourage you, when you're out there dealing with customers, earn the right to tell your story. Don't just show up and tell a story. We have in our company now, and I'm sure this is true where you are, although we have a no soliciting sign on our door. I don't know if the people that come there are blind or what, but they pay no attention to that whatsoever. And they walk right in, and they just immediately launch into a sales spiel with us about, you know, whatever it is, telephone services, shops, office supplies, cleaning, whatever, you know, you name it. They come in there, and we have never, ever bought anything from anybody that did that. In fact, we get them out the door as quickly as we can, and we're not unfriendly about it. We're not unfriendly people. But we have no interest in talking to somebody that just barges in the door and starts spewing out stuff about their product. We just don't have any interest in that. And probably neither do you. And let me tell you, neither do your customers and prospects. So you're going to have to come up with a better plan than that. So we've completely changed our marketing methods, including our internet marketing methods and everything else. The idea of providing value. After the break, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that, how on the internet even you can do this by providing blogs, technical information, again, things that are relevant to your business. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield, streaming live on biz1190.com. Be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad that you're here talking about ways to get your business kind of shaken out of a bit of a doldrum or I don't want to say a slump, because a lot of you are not slumping necessarily. You just sort of are in a rut, perhaps, in your business, and you're looking around a little nervous, perhaps, that you're perhaps losing the edge in a couple of ways. I'm trying to encourage you on things to do that. We've talked already about one of the things is to accept the new normal as it is, except now for what it is right now. You know, another, this is a little tidbit, and this applies to almost every area of life. You know, it never does any good to blame other people for shortcomings of yours. And here's the deal. If you have a leadership role in a business, if you can stand around all day and blame the economy, you can blame your employees, you can blame your boss if you're not the if you're not the boss at the business. You can blame the industry you're in. You can blame, you know, the internet. Blame whatever you want to blame. It doesn't make any difference. You can't do anything really about that because it's these nebulous things that can't be blamed. But here's what's very empowering for anybody. And any person that has that aspires to be a leader needs to adopt this. Leaders take responsibility. They take responsibility not just when things are going good. In fact, most leaders don't take responsibility. They share things when things are going great. They share the rewards of that with everyone else. But when things go bad, real leaders take responsibility themselves. They take it themselves. And here's the unusual little thing about that. That's actually very empowering. It is not empowering to blame other people because you can't do anything about that. You know, if you have an employee that's not performing up to standards, you can stand around and just lose sleep at night blaming that employee. But if you take responsibility yourself and you say, you know, I'm the leader here, and therefore I am the problem. If I'm allowing substandard performance to take place in my company, I'm the problem. Here's why that's empowering. If I am the problem, then I am the solution. That means, and that allows you to begin to take actions and do something about it instead of sitting around whining about things that are going on. You know, whining just doesn't do it. I've heard a guy say, you know, you need to be gaining, not complaining. You know, just do positive things, and whining and complaining rarely get you anywhere. I heard a speech recently by the guy that was in the movie Act of Valor. He played the SEAL commander, and he's actually a SEAL. His name is Rourke Denver, And he's retired, I think, from the Navy now. But at one time, he was actually in charge of all SEAL training. You can imagine what a tough job that is. I heard a speech by him, and he was talking about ways of making leadership decisions. And he was actually talking about battlefield decisions and how they decide things in a hurry. And he said one of the things they train to do is to limit their field of view. You know, you can look, you can try to scan the entire horizon and look at everything all around you, and you can become overwhelmed. But he said, limit the field of view to what's important. If you've got a guy shooting at you, limit your field of view to that and deal with that. And I think that's the whole point of focusing. You know, we have all these problems in business. We're trying to handle this or trying to handle that, and we give everything equal billing. Well, that doesn't work. Everything in life does not get equal billing. Everything in life is not urgent and important. And it becomes a real game sometimes, and a real part of wisdom, I think, to learn what to focus on. And conversely, that means what not to focus on. And you may have to let some things pass away. And you may say, I can't handle this little problem over here right now because I'm actually engaged in a big problem here. And I can't leave this big problem and come over there. I'm not going to be distracted to come over and fool around with a less important problem. Maybe that problem does need to be handled and maybe you need to delegate it, but I'm not going to let loose of what I'm doing and get over there and take care of that. I also heard a speech recently, a very interesting speech by Peyton Manning, a great quarterback. And Peyton talked about that, you know, when he steps up to the behind the center to take a snap, that he has a view of the field nobody else has. And he's able to see what's out there with the defense, and he sees, the where the safeties are lining up, and he sees, exactly how everybody's lining up, and that he can, and by seeing that, he can perhaps see opportunities other people don't see, and so he'll call an audible there at the line, and perhaps send one of his running backs out into his wingback or something out into an area that looks to him is going to be uncovered based on where the safety has lined up. Well, there's a great principle about that. The idea that you know, as leaders in business, we do need to keep our heads up and look around us. And not be arrogant thinking we know everything, but look around and see where opportunities are, and then be bold and really, really courageous if necessary to go after them and get that done. I think part of that is to devote yourself to preparation. You may need to prepare, and also it's going to be uncomfortable. You know, I think so many of us, particularly if we've had a little bit of success in business, we get a little too comfortable. And I see this all the time. Guys, they'll build a really nice business, and then they will get very, very, very comfortable in that business. And what happens then, it begins to slip away from them. Of course, then they begin to get a little panicked about it and depressed about it. Well, the fact of the matter is that we're not really designed as human beings to be comfortable all the time. We actually do a little better when there's a little bit of stress. One thing I have learned being around other business guys, you know, you always look at some other guy and he seems so self-assured and so successful and everything's just going right with him. And you know, you're kind of in an inner turmoil, word to death. You know, I used to joke about, you know, we would have a great month and everybody else in the company is happy about it. And I'm immediately thinking, oh man, what are we going to do this month? Last month was great, but this month, oh man, we hope we stay in business. You know, that kind of, And I find that I'm not unusual in that. But when you go talk to these other guys that seem so self-assured and so confident, when you really get inside their heads and get to know them, what you'll find out is they're no different than you. Everybody successful lives in a state of a bit of discomfort. That's just how it is. I sort of view it like a rubber band. You know, if you take a rubber band and you twist it a little bit, it gets tension in there. But that tension's a bit of is some energy too. You need the energy of being a little bit uncomfortable to get it done. You know, this is a little more minor situation, but I try to exercise every morning. And one of the things that gets me out of bed is if I don't exercise, I'm going to get fatter than I even am. So, again, that's a bit of discomfort about that. Now, I don't like getting out of bed and climbing up Stone Mountain over here in DeKalb County, but I do it every morning because I don't want to get any fatter than I am. And also, I've learned that once I've kind of gotten myself in shape to go up and down there, if I don't do it for a few days, well, you know what happens. If you skip that for a few weeks, it's like you never did it and you're starting over again. And I don't want to get back there. So learn to be uncomfortable. Learn to thrive, perhaps, in discomfort and actually count it as a blessing. you know, we're that way. If you think about medicine for a minute, and the idea of pain, I didn't know. I read a book some years ago called Fearfully and Wonderfully Made by a guy named Paul Brand. And he talked in there about something I didn't know. He was actually an expert in leprosy. And one of the type of leprosy that he treated, something I didn't know this, but one of the problem with leprosy, at least the type that he talked about, is that the pain nerves were deadened. That's why people, a person with leprosy could have a cigarette in their hand and let it burn down to the nub and burn their finger off and not know it because they had no pain nerves. That's why a lot of them had no fingers. A person with leprosy could step off a curb and break their ankle and just keep walking and destroy the ankle to where they had end up having to have the foot amputated or whether it makes it you know, just got a horrible infection and they either died from gangrene or the foot was permanently deformed. And you find these kind of deformities, and he talked, so we began to talk about in that book about the fact that pain is actually a blessing. Now, we don't think of it that way, but you know, when you step off a curb and your foot immediately is telling you that you're stepping on something sharp and you pull that foot back away from it, that's a blessing rather than continue to step on a nail and have it shove all the way through your foot. Again, I think in business, a little bit of pain is a blessing. You know, we don't go seeking it. I certainly don't. But we don't go seeking it. And the same thing, one type of pain is change. You know, change. People are scared to death of change. And it's me included. None of us like change. We all get comfortable. We don't like change. But we can't let change get us down. In fact, we should learn to be stimulated by change. And I realize that's easier said than done, but learn to be stimulated because the business world is going to change around you constantly. I can tell you in our business, and I've said this as a joke, but it's not really a joke, but I've said it just kidding around with some of my friends. If I were investing in a business plan that I started EMA with back in 1990, I would invest a nickel. I would not invest a nickel in that business plan because our business is nothing like that now. And it's probably the same thing in your business. Over the past couple of decades, your business, no matter what it is, has probably changed quite a bit. And you've had to change with it. You either changed with it or you went out of business. And we all see this. Companies that will not change, they don't last. And we know this. So don't be that way. Don't let change get you down. Just adjust to the reality. Become sort of a master observer of the world around you. Again, that has to do with not being arrogant, be teachable. Don't think you know everything because you don't. Look around, see what's around you. That's a good way to get your business sort of out of a doldrum. When you look around, see what's different around you that was not there before, and instead of being cowed or nervous by that, embrace it. Figure out how you can make money. You know there's more money being made today than ever in the history of the earth. Do you know that? More than ever in history. And yet these are, some people would say these are horrible economic times. And they are different economic times. There's no question about that. And quite likely what used to make it won't make it now. But there's new technologies coming all the time. I'll hear occasionally Google or someone will buy some company and I never heard of them. I'll look, what did you guys do? And it's they have some app that I don't even understand what the app does. But, you know, this is some company with 100 employees are sold for $2 billion or something. You think, good grief, how in the world? Well, just think about what an incredible opportunity that is. You couldn't even do that in the past. Great time to be doing that. If you were to read books like Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, as a lot of you probably have, or Unselling, which is a book I really like by a guy named Peter Burke, they both give examples of, as I've talked about earlier, about earning the right to do business. Gladwell actually uses the idea of an epidemic disease as an example of how traditional sales and marketing has happened. In the beginning, a disease spreads very quickly, but over time, the affected organism develops antibodies, and at some point, the affected population dies out and the remaining population is immune. That's a perfect example, I think, to how many of our traditional sales and marketing methods have worked. You're listening to Driven to Business. More to come. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. Hey, by the way, remind you again, as I like to do several times, we're streaming live on biz1190.com along with all the other great programming on here. You can actually download the biz1190.com, or the biz1190, I should say, app from the iTunes store. Just go there, put that in, and download it. You can email me at Eddie@EddieMayfield.com. The show website is EddieMayfield.com. Today's program will be podcast there and on iTunes, and there are a number of other blogs and podcasts there that you can listen to. As promised, before the show's kind of run by me on time here today, but I want to spend a little bit of time talking to you about website advertising and website marketing, because that's the big thing these days. It's also very misunderstood, I think. Let me tell you a couple things about it to start with. This is just some of my observations. We do very well. Let me just tell you this: we're not a very small business, but we're a fairly small business at EMA. But we do a lot of business over the website, a lot of business. I don't know anyone our size does more than we do over the website. So not that I know everything. I don't mean to imply that. There are a lot of people very expert in that. But I'll give you a couple little hints that might help you along with that. Here's the first thing: pretty is not enough. There's always seems to be to me a bit of a battle between the real artsy graphic designer type people and more sales oriented engineering types like me. I'm more about the content than I am how it looks. And I'm not saying I'm always right about that either. I think how it looks is important. But don't sacrifice content to look pretty. Don't just have a bunch of pretty pictures on there or the latest and greatest thing. We are long past in our society, I'll tell you this, long past people being impressed by pretty pictures or moving animations and things like that on websites. People are long past that. If your website is playing music when somebody shows up, unless you're a music store or unless you're a band or something, get rid of it. Don't do that. That just annoys people when they're sitting at their desktop and they pull up a website and it starts making noise all over the place. They don't like it. Get rid of that kind of thing. If your information is interesting and of value to people, they will click a number of times. Now, we're always told that people will only click three times. You should not make people click too many times to get down to the information. But once they do get there, I will tell you this: if your information is of interest to them, like, you know, we're a technical business and people are looking for technical information. And what we find is once they get there, once we make sure they get there easily to at least the top level area where this information is, once they get there, they may burrow very deep into it. And you think about yourself, if you're doing the same thing, if you're researching a new piece of equipment or an automobile or something like that on the internet, you may dig very deeply once you get to the information you're looking for. So you can have plenty of clicks there in that regard and a bunch of links and so forth. That'll work well. But make getting to that equipment very, very, very easy, at least to the top level where you want to get. Don't think somebody's going to spend a lot of time searching your website to even get to the top level when they're not even positive the information they're looking for is even on your site. Don't spend time looking at that. So, I mean, that's one of the things to do there. Don't make your website confusing. You know, something very easy that people skip all the time. Have an easy way to be contacted. I mean, don't make people have to go find out how to reach you. You know, you're selling something on your website. If someone has come to your website, either through a search engine or because you've handed out a business card on there or because they've heard about you from a referral or something, they get there and they want to do business with you, well, do business with them. Make them have your phone number all over the place. I mean, if that's how you're going to be contacted, or make it very easy to get you by email, or have live chat. You know, you can buy programs these days that will, for very little money, will put live chat on your site. And we do a lot of business on live chat. And now they may only use it to like ask you to call them, but it's just funny how people are. Well, they're on your website. Instead of picking up the phone, they would rather type a few sentences in there and say, hey, do you do this? Will you call me at, you know, that happens to us all the time. And it could happen to you. Make it there. Don't make it annoying to people, but make it get done. The other thing is people do have to find your site. So you're going to have to pay attention to search engine optimization. Google changes the rules all the time. You know, Google now, some of you have read this recently probably. You know, if you don't have a mobile-friendly site and people are looking for you on a mobile device, Google will penalize you a bit. You'll be pushed down in the rankings by not by not having a mobile friendly site. Now, as I understand it, if they're looking for you on a website, on a desktop, that doesn't matter. But, you know, depending on the kind of business you are as to whether people look for you and who your customers are, whether what kind of device they're looking for you on. The other thing is just be sure that once they get there, there's plenty of information for them to do it. The other thing about Google really likes relevant information. So the more blogs you write relevant to whatever business you're in, and you decide that, you know, it's a great exercise to sit down and think, you know, if I were interested in the kind of product or service that I sell, what would I type into the search engine? And go type that in there and see who comes up. And then figure out a way that you can do that. You can do it by either pay-per-click advertising. That we do a lot of that. That works fine. That is expensive, I'll tell you that. It's much better if you can get the what we call organic searches, where Google can find you by organic searches. And one way to do that is to write a lot of technical blogs. If you're not a particular technical business, then information blogs. Write information. Write articles about whatever business you're in. And just make them really good, and be sure that you include in there, make them well written. Let me tell you this: you want somebody to look at them, but include in there things like the keywords that you have decided people want to look at. Don't just arbitrarily put a bunch of keywords in there. You'll have Google penalizing you for that. But write it, make it useful. Make the website both friendly to Google and useful to your prospects or customers that are hunting for you. I'm telling you another little quick thing to do, and you may need to get yourself a tech guru to do this. If you're unable to do it, get a Google sitemap on your site, because Google, what that does is that every time you make a change on your website, that actually relays back to Google that you made that change. And if you go to Google, Google actually has pages you can go to, and they will tell you themselves how to be more friendly, how to be found by them. Well, believe them. This is Google. Believe what they say. When they say to do it that way. You know, also Google now, we learned this, if you're on a really, really, really slow loading site, like you're being hosted on some freebie site somewhere, it's excruciatingly slow, you may be downgraded by Google by loading so slowly. So it might be worth the investment to move to a faster place. If you're not a techie guru that can do that, again, go find yourself a kid, somebody that knows how to do it, and get them to make your site where it loads faster. There's a lot of tricks about that, and people can get that done for you. Let's talk just a real quick moment here about email for about a minute here. Here's the first rule about email marketing. Don't spam. Email marketing does work. People say it doesn't. Yes, it does. It does work. Just don't spam. And spam is in the eye of the beholder. You don't get to decide what is spam. The person getting the email decides if it's spam. I suggest using an outside company to do email, like MailChimp or someone like that, and let them maintain your list, because if an email address bounces, they will take it off. If someone unsubscribes from your email, and by the way, don't purchase a bunch of lists, collect your own list. If someone unsubscribes, then people like MailChimp will unsubscribe, and they will not allow you to put them back in. That's all following these canned spam rules. You need to let people know that you, in fact, do not wish to spam them. You want to give them information, but you do not want to spam them. And then we always have this argument in our company about how often we should do it. I don't have a good answer for that. That's going to depend on your market and what you're telling them. People are interested, though, in certain things, and we will find occasionally we can do email campaigns, and we really, really, really write a lot of business off of it. Other ones we do, you don't get much. But, you know, that's just how marketing is. Not everything hits a home run. You just try a few things. But what you mainly don't want to do is don't run off your prospects. Let me also say this about the whoever you're emailing to. The list is king. The list is king. The list outweighs, no matter what you're emailing, how nice a piece you're in, if you're emailing just a text email to the right list, that'll draw a lot more than the prettiest email you can imagine to the wrong list. So think of that. Hope it's been helpful today, and we'll see you again next week. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You've been listening to Driven to Business.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.